Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Ann Baldwin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of The Connection. It's great to have you along on this Sunday. I am Ann Baldwin, President and CEO of Baldwin Media.
I'm Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, President and CEO of The Connection.
Connection. We were just...
Good morning.
Good morning. We were just having a fun little conversation because pet peeves. I don't have that many. I have like two.
Really?
That I know of, but one is when people click their pen.
Okay.
And there was just one of our guests was clicking their pen, and I almost had to throw her out, but I just said she threw her pen on the ground, she can stay.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Isn't that funny?
What else? It's okay.
Yeah.
What else?
Just that, and also like the paper around straws and napkins when people, like you're at a restaurant and people are touching that, it makes my teeth hurt.
Really?
Yes.
There might be a diagnosis for that.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
I'm not sure what it, although the ladies here may know, but we won't go there.
No, we won't. I mean, I know I have been diagnosed with a lot of things, and I think I'll just deal with what I've got for now. But anyway, so we're here, you know, doing the show. We're in the studios here at Baldwin Media New Britain, and I'm so happy to have some of our business neighbors and friends
yes.
here in the studio today. Gail Liebert and I go way back, and Gail is the grand poobah, one of the grand poobahs at Kleenberg. And Kleenberg is really an amazing place, Lisa. And you know, you at The Connection, you do great work in so many arenas and so many areas, and so doesn't Kleenberg. And that's what we're going to talk about.
Absolutely.
Is some of their programs, of which there are so many, and so many great stories, and we could go on and on and on. But today we've got Erica Mello, and she is with the Children's Advocacy Center. She's the director of that program. And Kathy Carbine, who is the clinical supervisor of outpatient services, which is located it in Hartford. So we've got a full house. Welcome.
That's
ladies.
Great. Welcome.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the services. And I know in talking to Gail and her bringing you in here today, she had mentioned that this advocacy center is one of the newer programs that Kleenberg has. So let's talk a little bit about that and, you know, what kind of, why was it born, if you will?
Yeah, so we've been functional and up and running now since September 2017. And really the idea behind a CAC is to provide a central hub for a child abuse response. So when there's an allegation of child abuse, you have law enforcement and DCF who are having kind of concurrent investigations, and there could be confusion and lots of mayhem that goes on with that. Also, the more partners that are involved, the more opportunities for the child and the caregiver to be re-traumatized. So the CAC movement actually began down in Huntsville, Alabama back in 1985. Ours has been open much less long, but it was started by a district attorney who sort of saw that down in his area. And since then, the CAC movement has really expanded. There are over 800 in the U.S. and abroad, and ours is one of the baby ones, but yeah.
So, Erica, let me ask you this question about, I can't even imagine, you know, you think about victims of domestic violence or abuse of any kind, And sometimes, you know, maybe I watch too much television, but we know it's reality in real life too. And I can't imagine going through that and then having to go through the discovery process and the maybe goes to through the judicial process and all that. But for that, you need the information and you need the evidence. So what makes this application, if you will, or the way that these kids are spoken to different than any other program?
Right. Well, that's a great question. So we have specially trained forensic interviewers, and their job is to do a few things. One, they're gathering information in a way that's child-friendly, but also non-leading, because kids are very impressionable. We also have the interviews live-streamed to our investigative partners, so the children don't have to interact with law enforcement or DCF if they don't want to.
Therefore, not re-traumatized.
Yes, right. Exactly. Yeah. So the child, the ideal scenario is that the child tells their story just the one time, and we have that input from the partners to ensure that we're getting all the information they need, but we're also doing it in a way that hopefully is minimally traumatizing to the children.
Exactly. Can you talk about exactly what is trauma for those listening who may not understand?
Sure. Do you want to take that one, Kathy?
Yeah, I can. So trauma is a more of a disturbing or distressful situation that's happened to a child or family that's really impacted them negatively. Affects their functioning, their ability to feel safe, their ability to engage in school and environments. So that's really just like the gist of what trauma can do.
Mm-hmm. And we know that trauma is a lifelong healing process, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It really takes a lot of work and clinical therapy to really rework the trauma so that they gain mastery over it.
Exactly.
So it's not controlling their lives.
Exactly. Can you speak to the therapeutic interventions that you use for your clients?
So more specifically that I've been trained in is trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a 16 to 21 week treatment modality that works with the children and families in providing psychoeducation on abuse, going over coping skills, relaxation, identifying affect, so meaning identifying feelings and being able to put a feeling to a situation, cognitive coping. So when a child is traumatized or family is, there's distorted thinking. So like thoughts that are not really appropriate. So they've come kind of disjointed or
correct.
And so what happens is that these kids have these false thoughts about the situation and their self-blame. So they're working on that, and working on that, we're trying to change those things and kind of help with the cognitive piece of changing the thinking and the brain and the connection. And then there's also a telling of the narrative. So they can get to a point where the parent are learning all these skills parallel to the child.
Which is key.
It is extremely key, because without a supportive parent, the resiliency and the child's ability to really overcome trauma is low.
Right.
And so that form of therapy is something that we really focus on in our clinic. And then I'm also trained in child family traumatic stress intervention, which is a immediate response evidence-based practice right after a disclosure. So right after a forensic or within 45 days of the incident or the disclosure at the interview, where it's really, again, psychoed piece, assessing their assessments, like, are the kids having a hard time sleeping? Are they not functioning well at school? And educating the family and getting the kids and the family to talk about it. It's not a secret. It's
exactly.
Not shame. Mm-hmm. So those are key things, really making a child have resilience and helping families cope through such difficult challenges.
If you were to sort of guesstimate, how many children do you typically serve in a year? And what is the average, or even monthly, and what is the average range of the children that you see? Obviously, there's a range, but are you seeing a specific group more than others, or is it just across
the board? In regard to abuse type?
Yes.
I feel like we see a lot of sexual abuse.
Yeah.
I think number-wise, it's not as high as I would think I'm seeing it. It's a very consistent referral source.
Yeah.
Or problem sexualized behavior. So meaning kiddos who have engaged in some really negative
right.
sexualized behaviors. On average, and we also get physical abuse, neglect, emotional. Sometimes it's a gamut of many different abuses and neglects that are kind of these poor kiddos have been through.
And the youngest that you've seen?
Four.
Four.
Yeah. In the CAC, we see 3 to up to 18, but also we see adults with developmental delays.
Yes.
3 years old.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Erica Mello, and she's the director of the Children's Advocacy Center, and Kathy Carbine, the outpatient clinic supervisor for Kleenberg. And Kleenberg, historically, was the Kleenberg Children's Home. And you go back to how that all started. You know, I don't know if you're aware of the history, Lisa, but it was an orphanage for young people started by the Reverend Kleenberg. And now you look at it and it's just, it's so encompassing. It's so many other things, so many other programs, two of which we're talking about here today on this show. And when you think about kids 3 years old on up having to deal with this kind of thing, it's so tragic, but yet it's such a blessing that there are programs that have been designed and devised just for, you know, that age group. And I understand, you know, I have an 8-year-old daughter and she's, I don't like the word, but I guess it exists, bullying. And there's this little girl that just made her hand into like a gun and I'm going to get you and was, you know, doing that to her in class. And she's talk about sleepless nights. She was traumatized by that. But the conversations with the family and when my daughter, her mom said, look, you know, Brady, her husband, you know, he served in Afghanistan. He's a soldier. He's our soldier. He's here to protect us. We're all here to protect you. Those kinds of conversations are what have her sleeping through the night. So that's nothing compared to what some of these people go through. So thank you, first of all, for what you do.
Would you be able to share us a client story, of course, without revealing any identities or confidential info to our listeners?
Absolutely. So I had actually chatted with Kathy a little a little bit about this, and there's one case in particular that it started out in the CAC, and again, without giving any identifying information away, there was some abuse allegations from a non-family member. Caregivers were struggling with the allegation. The child was struggling. They came in. Nobody was connected to any mental health services, anything like that. So our advocate that was working on the case connected them to Kathy, connected the child, and has had an ongoing conversation with the caregivers as well. I'll let Kathy talk a little bit about the therapeutic interventions as well, but in the meantime, that advocate was working with the MDT partners to give updates. Long story short, this case is currently moving forward into prosecution. Caregivers are still engaging in advocacy to make sure any needs they have that are going to get in the way of them providing that support to their child are met. And one of those needs would be the clinical piece. So
yeah, so it was a really nice coordination between the CAC and the clinic. It was smooth. We got the family in pretty quickly once they were ready. They weren't ready right away after disclosure, but when they were ready, and I really speak to Lou's one of the advocates, really doing that advocacy work to being there and being where the family was at. And this family has been engaged. They come consistently. The parents are looking for information. They are supportive. The kiddo's engaged. It's like we're making strides. It is a slow process just due to the nature of this allegation, but it's wonderful to see because we don't always get those success stories.
Exactly.
But I'm a little confused though. So some child, a young person, we'll just call them that, goes to the parents and says, mom or dad, I think I've been inappropriately touched. That's how it works. Okay. And then, so then the family support, you keep calling them the caregiver, but okay. So the mom and dad said, well, we want to take this to the next step. So they go in for the forensic interview process, right?
They'll connect with likely DCF or law enforcement. So that's how we get our forensic interview referrals.
Okay.
And we don't schedule unless both law enforcement and DCF have at least been notified of the case. They can choose. Sometimes you'll have a situation where just one will be involved, but we want to make sure that they both are in the loop at least. That's when the family would come to us.
Okay. And then you talk about the forensic video that happens, and then that's also the tool that is then used in taking it to the next step, which is prosecution. Wow.
And also for treatment, too. So this child, I forgot to mention, also had an appointment with our partners over at CCMC, the SCAN program, and we actually will have them on site very soon. They're going to be able to do medicals right at the CAC.
Oh, that's great.
Very soon, yes. But the interview can also be used to help Kathy make her clinical assessments for the mm-hmm. doctors so that they don't have to reinterview that child as well. They can get an idea of what the allegation was to also make sure that child is medically okay.
Mm-hmm. So I do have a question because I think this is really key, especially for the work that we do with the Connection. You're as a staff person and a professional, you're constantly hearing trauma, a lot of trauma yourself from your clients. And so staff self-care is key.
Absolutely.
It's so important in this work that we do. And so what I'd like to talk to you about, because you guys have such a great reputation, is talk about self-care for your staff and what do you do? What do you provide your staff to be sure that there's self-care?
I'm excited that you asked about that. We're very big on that at Klingberg. And we're even developing it in the CAC currently with my help, just some self-care groups, mm-hmm. talking about what's called vicarious traumatization,
right.
where we're traumatized by the stuff we
of
hear
course.
Daily and what that looks like and how that affects us and how it can affect into our personal life and our mm-hmm. work. Having good clinical supervision. Having supervision is so key.
It is, absolutely.
Along with really providing support staff meetings and places where sometimes we're just not talking about the work. We're grounding ourselves.
It's great to hear that. Obviously, you know, you have to keep that at the forefront of the work that you do, because hearing that over and over again is really extremely difficult for staff, and staff are our most important asset, right, to get this work mm-hmm. done. And it's great to hear, which I, of course, knew that you did that, but I wanted you to talk about it because I think that folks listening have to wonder, you know, how do you continue to do the work that your great staff do?
Mm-hmm. Right. How do you get up and go to work every day? We're talking about Klingberg's Children's Advocacy Center. It's also called the KCAC, right? KCAC.
KCAC, yeah.
KCAC. And what it really is a hub of multidisciplinary partnerships between really professionals that investigate these allegations, you know, and it's really looking into this from a child-friendly, developmentally friendly, and clinically appropriate manner. That's really what this is all about. And then those results are referred to the Child and Adolescent Trauma Services, which then provides those wraparound services. So it's not like you've got to go through this whole process before the child or the victim gets the immediate help that they need. You're addressing the immediate needs of that victim, if you call it that, right off the bat.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason for this response, too, is from even an investigative standpoint, you have better outcomes when kids are healthy and able to participate in their investigation.
If our listeners are interested to learn more about your organization, would you please share your website information?
Yes, that's klingberg.org, and that's spelled K-L-I-N as in Nancy, G-B-E-R-G.org.
Yay.
That's
nice
fantastic.
Job.
All right.
All right. If you didn't get that right, you got a problem, because yes. you did a really good job of telling us how to do that, Erica. Thank you very much. You know, and there are great programs over there. A lot, you know, some of the programs, I've learned a lot about Klingberg over the years and had the opportunity to be involved, whether it's, you know, your car shows that you have or just so many great things. And like your organization, everybody needs to fundraise. Everybody needs to support these organizations and the good work that they're doing, because, you know, the reality is real that funds are getting shorter and shorter. So this is just one more example of how Klingberg has started as an orphanage and expanded services in so many different arenas, of which these are just two. I think one of the things that you both have in common, the Connection and Klingberg, is your, you know, therapeutic foster care program and the need for foster parents. So it's not like anybody's stepping on anybody's toes, man. Everybody needs these things. Everybody needs a good family and just needs a loving home and a roof over their head. And kids go through so much today. I see some of these kids and I hear about some of these situations and you wonder, you know, they don't have a shot in hell at you know, becoming a productive member of society if they don't get services and the help and the love that they deserve. It's so sad.
Exactly. And that's why we're in the community helping. There's enough need. And if we can just help out and wherever they can get services, it makes a huge difference.
So what are the next steps for your organization? And then I also know that, you know, there's so many different organizations for like mandatory reporting now, you know, whether it's educators or daycare providers or whomever. So I would assume that the awareness and the work log and the number of people coming forward is growing, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Recently, the CEC has seen a pretty big uptick in our workload. So we've had the fortune of receiving some additional funding from VOCA that allowed us to expand our advocacy services, our mental health services, and with that also came some physical plant expansion, which we're actually in the process of wrapping up, which is very exciting. The CEC was also recently awarded a grant that allows us to create a 40-hour advocacy training specific to child abuse. Mm-hmm. Which
That's
is
wonderful.
Yep,
mm-hmm.
And it'll be available statewide. It'll be also on our on a learning management system, so each of the modules will be accessible after the fact. So really, we're moving in a lot of different directions.
It's exciting.
Yeah, and I think with all those new mandated reporting, getting out there doing trainings, there's a minimal facts mm-hmm. curriculum that we can do in the schools, and with there's two different versions, but there's one in the schools for folks that might get a disclosure and not know how to handle that. So,
well, so you got to educate. There's different layers of communication, right? And everybody's got to have awareness. That's great. I'm going to ask maybe what might be considered a tough question, but I would assume that not all allegations of abuse turn out to be factual. I've seen a lot of, you know, false reporting, or kids, like you said, they have imaginations, or maybe they're being told by an alienated parent that this is what you need to say happened to you. So I'm also assuming that your tools will help identify something that may not be a reality.
That certainly does happen from time to time. I think that's a lot more rare than the other version. But yes, the within even the forensic interview, there are parts of the curriculum that look for essentially detecting coaching.
But I would imagine that once the allegation gets to you, it has been
right. It's been vetted.
It's been vetted, and it's been
law enforcement, DCF. Yeah, course, that's a good point, because it doesn't get to you without going through those channels. And I bet there's so many more out there. That's why I think it's so great that programs like this, you know, that Kleinberg is really spearheading, raises awareness for all of us. And that's why we wanted to have you on this program today, is because we all need to be more aware. We all need to help these young people get the support and the help that they need, and persecute and put these criminals where they need to be too. Because, while they're out there on the streets, I mean, it was just at social media today, another, you know, child has gone missing walking home from school, and it's just horrible. And you don't always know who to trust anymore. You know, you thought you could leave your kid with that next door neighbor because they're nice people, but maybe not. Or you thought the neighborhood boy was a great babysitter, maybe not. You know, all these different scenarios that go through your mind. So I think additional training, professionalism, and I'm glad to see that you're getting additional funding, because you know what that means? What you're doing is working.
Absolutely.
Proven results. And that's where the money comes from.
We are grateful for the work that you're doing.
Yes.
Thank you.
So this was very interesting. Not one of those topics that you always want to have to talk about, but it's great that there are resources out there for people who need them. That's what we talk about on the show all the time, right, Lisa?
Yes, we do.
Yes. And again, if you want more information on this great organization, they've got great events coming up. It's a great place to go visit. They've got a nice little museum, which I just saw the other day, which is really cool. One of the few orphanages that has their actual museum. It's really, it's a jaw dropper and a tearjerker at the same time. And that website address is Kleinberg, KLINGBERG.ORG. So this was interesting, and we want to thank, as we always do, you, our listeners, for tuning in to this edition of The Connection right here on
WTIC News Talk 1080.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.